Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to FFS. I'm David Coulthard, and raring to go on the screen in front of me is Eddie Jordan.
Wow, David, I'm raring and raring to go. I'm so happy to see you, by the way, and I'm in London for a change. And it's happy days.
Yeah, you're back. We're getting closer to each other. I'm still in the south of France.
Well, you might regret saying that in future, but anyway, for now, yes, we are closer.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing each other in a couple of weeks, I think, aren't we? We're going up to a charity gig in Scotland.
Absolutely, yeah, for the great Tom Hunter. That's important. And I never thought I'd be asked to speak at a Scottish Entrepreneurs Evening. And then they asked you as well. I mean, who's the one giving the insight into all this?
Well, I have responded to your call and knowing how much you do for charity. And I will be there with you rather than with my girlfriend celebrating her birthday.
You're not bringing your girlfriend?
No, she's with her family. But I'm just letting you know, I am, you know, doing that for you because you do so much for charity. So I'm not expecting you to say thank you.
And you're not trying to get away from her family? You're trying to...
No, I love her family. Family are great.
Well, I'm impressed.
A lot of fun. Anyway, right, let's move this along. We're going to be keeping things relatively current this week and catch up on some news from the world of Formula One. But first, you're in London, EJ, and you're going to be going to the Chelsea match. So I'm just curious, as a Dubliner, why Chelsea? What's the whole story with you supporting them?
Well, very simple. I live probably a 15-minute walk away, and we're able to walk to the ground, have a few pints in the Hollywood Arms or Brinkley's or wherever, and you meet the same people every week, and it's like sort of being back at school days. You know, it's just pals, have something to drink, a little bit to eat perhaps, and wind up at the game, shout abuse at the referee and various other things, and unpleasantries at the opposing team. You know, usual soccer fun and frolic. So
Do you go in the stands, or are you in hospitality?
Oh, no, I'm a knacker. I'm on the West End, upper, and I'm just off the halfway line. I've had those tickets now since I was here, mid-90s. So coming up for 30 years, I've got those tickets with Chelsea. And when I don't go, Killer goes, your old pal at Whisper.
Your son.
Killer, my son, absolutely. Kyle or Killian. Killian is becoming really popular now because Killian Murphy has made the word Killian. So I think when Killian went to school first in Oxford, they couldn't say Killian properly, so they called him Killer, and it kind of stuck with him. And everybody knows him as the Killer. But anyway, let's move on from that. That's just our baby in the family.
Excellent, excellent. Well, look, I wish your team well. And do you want to know what I've been up to this weekend or last weekend?
Well, you're going to tell us if you haven't been.
Yeah, you're supposed to say, oh, yes, I'm really interested, David. I went to Misano, and it's the first time I've been to Misano, which is more famous as a MotoGP racetrack. But what a brilliant track and what an amazing location. It was beautiful. We stayed with the Formula E team, Karun Chantok, a buddy of ours, amongst others. And yeah, lovely, lovely location. And I got to drive a Formula E, so I've been electrified.
You've been electrified all your life, DC. You are an electric person, and I love you for it. So anyway, let's talk about Formula E, because some people are not really into it because of the noise. And I think the racing is always frantic and fabulous in many respects. And what a gag has created there. I mean, we all know what a gag can do in terms of he's the guy who created this. He was also with Bernie and Flavio when they owned Queen's Park Rangers. You know, he has a lot of good quality. He'd be somebody that we should have on this programme, David, particularly if you've been there to the Formula E. It's fascinating. And only a couple of weeks ago, we had Ian Banner talking about when he brought Formula E to Cape Town. It's a very wordy championship. There's a lot of very, very high quality drivers in it. And I just wish it got more credibility.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The racing's great. A lot of talented drivers in that lineup. Many of them have been, you know, champions in other disciplines or have raced in Formula One. And I think that the reason why Formula E probably hasn't got more visibility globally is you just can't compare it to Formula One. You know, Formula One is the fastest form of motor racing with, let's say, the you know, money, no object technology. Formula E is the fastest form of single-seater electric racing. And of course, you know, because it doesn't have the outright speed, then it's not going to appeal to all. But I've been to a couple of the races this year. I'll also be in Monaco. It was really interesting for me to have a chance to drive the car, experience groove tires again. I haven't had that since back in Formula Ford in 1989. But of course, the acceleration is pretty impressive when you've got all that torque. Having had the opportunity to drive RB19 at Silverstone last year, which has a healthy dose of electrical energy on the initial acceleration phase, then, you know, I've got to say that I wasn't as surprised or impressed, let's say, with the axle of the Formula E, because Formula One car, it fills in where the torque hole is with an internal combustion engine, fills it in with electrical energy. And then when that starts to trail off through the programming that they do, the engine's there on song, turbo absolutely singing away, and you've got 1,000 horsepower being unleashed. But really nice to have that experience. And looking forward to Monaco, actually, getting more and more into it. Once you start to understand the discipline the drivers need and energy management, we had Oliver Rowland, British driver, who was leading the championship after the first round in Misano, ran out of energy halfway around the final lap. There was miscalculation, which incredible that they could do that after so many years of this championship. It's the 10th year, but it just goes to show that we're only human, and I think the engineers miscalculated. So sorry for him.
Absolutely.
He didn't get a double victory. But good fun to do that. I took Dayton, my son, along. So he had the opportunity to watch shadow me with the Whisper production team, seeing behind the scenes of how we put a TV show together, and also to go out on track with me and have a little blast around the circuit. So I really enjoyed it. Family fun weekend.
Fantastic. You cherish those moments, DC, because Dayton, he's already a big boy, and he'd be soon changing his focus from cars to girls, as indeed you did.
I think that ship sailed already.
Oh, has it really? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I before coming to do the podcast, I bumped into him in the underground parking. He's got a little electric car, because when you're 14 in Monaco, yeah, you can, they're classed as mobility scooters, I think. So instead of having him on a motorbike, he's got a little electric car, and it's a brilliant little thing. And he whizzed up and stopped in front of me, only a few millimeters from my knees, and he had his girlfriend on board. So he's already balancing out, developing his relationships whilst focusing on his racing.
It's not just confined to Monaco. I think you find in France, the same applies. Those electric cars, I think they're governed up to about 40 miles an hour, 40 kilometers.
Yes.
And it's 14-year-olds. Can you imagine getting a driving license at 14? It's just fantastic opportunity for them. And in the scheme of things, it's teaching the kids at a much earlier age to be respectful and to understand the rules of the road. And apparently, it's really, really working. I hope it's adopted in lots of other countries, because it seems to be a massive success in France and Monaco.
Yeah, well, I'd like to dream that something like that could happen in the UK, but I'm sure there'll be a whole bunch of people who'd think it was a mad idea. But sport teaches us, if you're good enough, you're old enough, and we've got no problem a 16-year-old stepping up to take a penalty in a Chelsea decider or any other major sporting event where in life a lot of time people go, oh, you know, how could they possibly be good enough to be out there? But I think it's accelerating their understanding and knowledge of being around pedestrians, cyclists and other vehicles and all at a speed which is relatively safe.
Look, the opportunities for younger people is unfolding on an almost daily basis, and I only make reference to what Oliver Bearman did. Was the one of the things is that so far this season in Formula One is one of the absolute highlights of what I've seen, to come in at a last minute, to be plunked straight into Carlos Sainz's car and to finish seventh ahead of Lando Norris and ahead of Lewis Hamilton was one of the all-time highlights that I can remember over last number of years, I think. So give youth a chance. And I think that was the philosophy at Jordan. We always tried to give people who had never been in that position before, give them the chance. You will be surprised what they will deliver for you. And then, of course, you groom them up, you prepare them, make them good results. And then, David, you know what happens? You sell them to Ferrari and you cop the cash. You go to Lugano and you bank the money and you say, shit, that'll keep Jordan going for another couple of months. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt that was all part of your master strategy. Right, should we talk Formula One? We've got the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend. We haven't been there for a few years. I'm not actually at that race. I'll be in Washington, D.C., doing a running show car event, driving the V8 Formula One car up and down Constitution Avenue.
Wow.
Which I had to really concentrate and not say Constipation Avenue. But so Formula One is just soaking up America. So I'll be there rather than in China. But you were one of the early adopters with China. I remember you had, was it National TV, was a partner sponsor on the Jordan car?
Absolutely. And I have to say, indirectly, I didn't ever want to do it because I was given the task. You know, in those days, Bernie used to say, well, look, Jordan, if I'm giving you $3 million to survive and pay your bills, you know it'll be coming out of your prize money out of next year. But by the way, you're on the plane to Shanghai, meet the people, shake hands with them and tell them how it is. And they were just keen to do, and we'd do a press conference. And that's what happened. So yes, I was one of the early people to go. And it was my first ever time on a bullet train. It's unmanned and you get into the airport. And next thing you know, you're in the center of Shanghai. And the thing has been doing 220, 250 kilometers an hour. It's quite remarkable. The technology that these people had 25, 30 years ago.
So there's a lot better than HS2 then.
I think just to say that China has its own good parts and its the bad parts, and that is the smog over Shanghai was something that really caught me. But then at nighttime, the Bung River and the nightclubs and just the hospitality, and as well you know, it's just a rock fest, isn't it? It's just the Chinese people know how to enjoy themselves, and they know how to. It's an amazing place. And before we sit and see what the media are castigating them as, I have to be honest with you, I think China has a lot to give because they are very respectful and they know everything about Formula One. And I'm very pleased that they're back there. I was disappointed. I didn't think this race would actually happen because I thought they'd got fed up with it. But pleased to say that they're back.
Good. Well, let's see how that weekend works out. I've got to assume we'll have the usual sort of running order of Red Bull setting the pace with Ferrari, Mercedes and the likes chasing them down. We've had the announcement of the calendar for 2025, 24 races again, but with a slight difference in that the first Grand Prix will be back in Melbourne. Do you think that makes a difference? Is that significant other than the fact you've got to ship everything a lot further for the first race?
You know, I'm sure the people at Melbourne, they had a very successful turnout. I think I remember seeing that they had 400,000 people over the 3 days. That's remarkable. Okay, I think Oscar Piastri was helpful in that. And then having Mark Webber involved, Daniel Ricciardo. Yes, I know that the starry lights over Daniel may have just, if you like, calmed down a touch, but he's still a huge character. Hugely well-liked. So I'm not surprised that it's going back because they would have paid. I think it's important to understand for our listeners that people pay more for the last race and they pay more for the first race. So I think there might have been a bit of an auction there. And I think the fact that we're going to Australia is where we always used to start. So I don't see anything different about freight and getting the people there. It just, I don't know what Williams are going to do. I presume they'll have three chassis by then. But anyway, never mind. Let's move on.
Okay, right. The other big news, Fernando Alonso. He was sort of towing the water with the various options that looked like they were out there, with Mercedes needing a driver, of course. Now Lewis Hamilton is heading to Ferrari. But he's committed himself until the end of 2026 at Aston Martin. Now, he'll be 45 years old at that point. And I think he is a phenomenon. I think he's one of the greatest drivers that's ever been in Formula One. His two world championships in 2005 and 2006 aren't really just reward for the way he's led teams in terms of outright pace. He has 32 wins, 22 poles, and 106 podiums. Now, is it a good thing that we have a 45-year-old in Formula One? Or, EJ, I suspect you, as you've always been a great supporter of the young driver, is that just hanging on for too long?
All of that. I think, but you know, he's able to drive the car as quickly as anyone else, so why shouldn't he? So I could see people for it and against it. Where I'm against it is not his fault. I'm blaming the cars. The cars are relatively, I'll never say a Formula One car is easy to drive, but it is easier to drive. You don't see the bull, like, for example, the Nigel Mansell, when he get out of the car, just about able to get out of the car because his neck was hanging off. David, you were around in this era when, you know, fitness was such an important thing. I think at 45 years of age, if you asked Alonso to go back into a car that is similar kind of racing 20-odd years ago, I think he would have retired by now. And I think a young up-and-coming person would have had a chance. No reflection on Alonso. It's not his fault.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But I do believe that Formula One is making a very serious mistake. And that is that the cars and the new rules with the weight of the car, they don't sound right. They're too heavy. They're easier to drive than what we remember them to be able to do so. And all you're doing is playing into the hands of the older driver, because it makes much more sense to hang on to what you got, and what you know is better than what you don't know. And I think the old established teams, and I used to have this argument with Ron Dennis all the time, he changed afterwards because he gave Lewis Hamilton the chance. But up to that, he always had somebody that had been somewhere before, or giving them a chance or whatever it was. Now, I don't know why and how you wound up in there, but nevertheless, we'll leave personalities out of this, David. I just think that young drivers are being cheated.
Yeah.
They are being cheated. They need to get the chance. What is the point in having a very strong Formula 2 championship? Look, we've already mentioned Oliver Bearman, and there's maybe five Oliver Bearmans out there that we know ourselves, David. Your own son, what chance has he got of making Formula One in the current state of situation? And why are people spending fortunes on their children and sponsors and various other things trying to get to Formula One when there's zero chance?
Well, it's definitely a very competitive route to Formula One with only 20 cars. I think Fernando is an exceptional driver, and I think what he does is offer a benchmark Okay, primarily for his teammate, because that's the only person with the same car, but he's still a benchmark for these younger drivers who do make it to Formula One. I had a couple of questions, one from Kevin O'Donovan and one from Jay Edwards. And basically, the two questions were about, are the F1 cars too easy to drive, and making the reference to Carlos Sainz coming back after his appendix being removed and then winning a Grand Prix. Well, I think the thing to try and explain to the viewers is, because the lap time difference between qualifying and the race is initially so big, the physicality of driving the car is in the lap time. So the faster the lap time, the higher the G-forces and the more energy, and therefore, you know, the more physicality. And, you know, we would have maybe 2 seconds difference between qualifying and then the start of the Grand Prix, because we'd refueling. So we didn't start the race with a lot of fuel on board. Sometimes, you know, 30, 40 kilograms of fuel, where they've got up to 100 kilograms of fuel on board. 10 kilograms is about 3 tenths, 3.5 tenths, depending on the circuit. So you've got several seconds in weight of the car just in the fuel alone. Plus you throw in the fact that the Pirelli tires need to be thermally managed, so they back away to keep the tires in shape as well. So they are well within their physical capabilities at the beginning of the Grand Prix. Very often you'll see them get out after a race and their hair's not even wet. They haven't even been sweating in the car. Now, of course, the generation are all exceptional. Every generation should be better than the previous. So I'm not saying that the drivers are not as talented. Of course not. They're exceptional. And we've got people like Fernando and Lewis who come from the previous generation of cars. But it is just, yeah, the cars are getting heavy and that makes them slower. And the amount of energy the drivers then dispel means they're just not working quite as hard in the cockpit, which is why when we had the race in Qatar where everyone was complaining about the heat and, you know, some members of the public were saying, oh, this is scandalous. They shouldn't be made to drive in those conditions. Well, people do ultra marathons. People do the Dakar, you know, through, you know, ask Carlos Sainz Sr., late nights, early mornings, sleeping in a tent. It's basically, I think that being pushed mentally and physically to your limit is part of being an athlete. And I think that, therefore, you should have extreme events that challenge you in that way.
David, I absolutely agree with that. And even when you say, let's say, you know, recent the Six Nations or whatever it is, players will play their heart out for 55 minutes, 60 minutes, and particularly the front row or second row, those people in the scrum, they are absolutely on their knees. They've given everything. So Formula One needs to show that the drivers who've won these races, Max, you know, what is difficult to accept is Max is winning these races by 11 seconds, but it could be just as easy 25 seconds if he decided to keep up the push. And what I think is important, which I'll come back to, just two things I want to come back to on the Chinese race. We mustn't forget that there is a sprint race. And I'm absolutely against the sprint races. And I think if we took a vote between the drivers, they'd all say, get rid of the sprint race. It proves nothing. It does nothing, causes too much confusion, and there's not enough. It's the most perfect, ideal way of getting young drivers or drivers who have not done more than 10 Grand Prix to be able to compete for a team and then have your sprint race. But the drivers are the drivers, and they're not remotely interested in a sprint race, because if you win a sprint race, it means nothing compared to winning a Grand Prix. So that's just my view on things like that. So either get rid of the sprint altogether or make it an opportunity for young drivers that Formula One has deprived these young drivers by allowing the cars to be too heavy, too easy to drive. And in my view, I want to see sustainable fuel. We're all living in fantasy land. If we think, I see more and more countries are now cancelling the ban that they had about having cars being electric by 2030, Sweden only last week, and then somebody else the following week. We are not going to see, whether we like it or not, we are not going to see a world of electric cars. So we need to rethink the whole situation, sustainable fuel, and get the sound of the engines right, get the weight of the cars down and make them harder to drive, and it'll be more fun. That's just my view. And then when we're adding on to that, why don't we have the sprint races for the young rookies?
Well, all good ideas. It sounds like EJ for FIA president. We should start that campaign.
That's me.
Yeah, I mean, you can affect change from the front. The other big news, of course, that we're waiting to find out about is Carlos Sainz. And in Italy, there's been growing speculation in the media that he is the favourite to take Lewis Hamilton's seat at Mercedes. So, EJ, if you were Ferrari, looking at Sainz now and how Lewis has performed as well, do you think, first of all, and I guess I know the answer to this, are they regretting their decision? And would you, if you were Mercedes, would you be getting Carlos in the car, existing winner, multiple winner, so you've got a real benchmark alongside George Russell, rather than trying to accelerate too quickly Antonelli's rise into Formula One?
Toto is hard to pin down, and he plays a very good poker hand. I think Antonelli is probably one of the favourites there. Carlos Sainz would be a great addition. There's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, Toto has to be careful because he manages George Russell. For sure, George Russell will not want Carlos Sainz in that car. And it's not his decision to do that. But I just feel that there'll be enough pressure put on Toto to make the situation in favour of the young up-and-coming driver. I happen to believe, and I have no reason to say this, but I do believe that Lance Stroll will stop this year. Or maybe go into management or go in and work with the team, which would be a good option for him because it's been pretty difficult. Let's be honest with it. It's been pretty difficult him being there, particularly with Alonso. You know, he's made no impression on Alonso whatsoever. And we know where Alonso has come from and his ability. So I do feel Lawrence Stroll will probably have a play for Carlos Sainz. And that's what I said before. I've no reason to change my view on that, although it is a wild card because the sensible money would be for him to go to Mercedes. And it really depends on how Toto's mind is working. And, you know, he's come out and said some strange things about Max. Do you think that was genuine or was he trying to undermine? When he was saying to the rest of the teams, guys, forget it, Max is in a different world. We're all fighting for second place if we're lucky. What's your take on something like that? Why would you actually make that kind of a statement about a rival team and a rival driver? What does it do to George, for example? What does it say to George? We can't develop the car any better?
Yeah, look, I think it's more a case of trying to woo Max, isn't it? You know, as there's been some trouble at Red Bull, then inevitably, as you know, EJ, in the Piranha Club of Formula One, when you see a weakness in another team, you jump in there and you're either all trying to steal drivers or steal sponsors or whatever it happens to be. So I suspect it's a case of that. And, you know, in this Netflix world where Formula One has been edited to the point where it's like really interesting as opposed to just a wee bit interesting, I think that they all know how to play the game. So I would say you need to get up very early in the morning to try and outsmart Toto Wolff. He is a very sharp operator.
Absolutely.
There's still a few questions, isn't there, of what's going to happen with the various other drivers. We've got the question over Daniel Ricciardo's performance relative to Yuki Tsunoda, of course. We've got Logan Sargeant waiting in the sidelines. If you just run the stats, Logan Sargeant at Williams, who's only managed to score a point in his career so far. Daniel at 35. Now, you would say that with Fernando at 45, by the time he ends his current contract, there shouldn't really be an age issue for Daniel. But where do you see those two drivers? So should Daniel, you know, has he got really any hope of moving to the main team, Red Bull, assuming that Checo Perez, who's been doing a really good job of late, wouldn't be with the team for the longer term?
I think his time has run out. He has not done enough for me to warrant a move to the main Red Bull team. In fact, I'm not sure he's done enough for me to be able to stay where he is. So he's another person who will be a great loss to Formula One. So I hope he's able to stay around either inside a team or outside a team. You know, I still believe that there is a great place for Daniel Ricciardo, either TV or commentaries or whatever it is. Of course, it's never the same as driving the car, but if you're not able to win or be on the podium or to do great things in a car, well, then why not look at another alternative?
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll find out in time for sure. I touched on Logan Sargeant. He's not had a stellar career at Williams. The team have been sticking by him. But have you got a view on why it's been so difficult for American drivers to ace it in Formula One? We had Mario Andretti, of course, and I saw recently that he's 80, is 85, coming to drive at Silverstone, an old Grand Prix car. The guy's unbelievable. He's timeless. But why do you think it poses such a challenge for American drivers?
You rightly say, we just should say that Mario was a world champion too. You know, there was all sorts of great American drivers in the past, and Mark Donohue and various other people like that. I don't know. I remember I was a teammate of Bobby Rahal, and in the States he was unbeatable, but he came here in Formula 2 with Chevron and it was really difficult for him. I think young Andretti, that's Mario's son Michael, I thought when he was at McLaren, I thought he did a decent job. Didn't do a stellar job, but he did a decent job. But I think he quit on probably a year too early and went back to the States. I think when you're able to win in IndyCar races, and when you go to Indianapolis and you have 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 people in one stadium at any given moment, it's very hard to then turn around in those days and go to Estoril for 20,000 or 30,000. And some of the races that we had at that stage were not to the level that they are now. So Sargeant and there has to be a connection somewhere there, because Williams, the high pinnacle that Frank and had for that team at Williams, and it's fallen apart. It seems a shame, and you must be really sad to see it because you were there in the heady days.
Yeah, but I've got to believe that in time things can be repaired. The DNA of that team is certainly a successful one. And James Isles, the team principal, has come from Mercedes. So we will watch and hopefully in time see them make their way back forward. I get the feeling that a lot of the teams now are very much sort of 2026, you know, new engine regs, new chassis regs. It just feels that a lot of the teams are just putting their resources towards that, and they've kind of thrown in the towel on this current set of regs, which is a bit disappointing. But anyway, I don't have my eye on all of the challenges that they do. EJ, just one thing that I want to address is a few episodes ago, we asked our anchors about the important issue of your growl. And here on this fastest growing podcast in the world, we've been inundated with responses. And a few of them, I'm not sure if you've seen, but Andrew Campbell, Luke Miller, Sandra Mulhall, Ernesto Rosa, and many more said we should keep it, or you should keep it. Alex Long says, sorry, I'm not a fan of the growl at all. Take it out. So Alex is not a fan. Roman says, love Eddie's growl. If anything, I should have one as well. Well, here's my attempt.
Meow.
No, you are such a pussy, aren't you, honestly?
You're the growler. And David Robinson has some advice for you. EJ, back when you were in the paddock, you would never allow anyone to tell you what to do. So don't change a thing. You be you. And he says, fuck him. All right, EJ, what do you reckon?
You allowed to use that word, David? You used it last week, I noticed, when I didn't let you speak.
It was written in front of me. I merely read the script, but I just need to throw it back out to the anchors and say that whether you're either for hashtag growl loud or hashtag give up the growl grandad, you can continue to let us know at ffs@whisper.tv or on social media at F1 for success. Now, EJ, just looking at the timings, we're probably going to have to start wrapping up soon. But before we go, I'd like to tell the listeners about a few exciting things that are coming up. And the first is that they can now watch full episodes of some of our previous interviews on the YouTube channel. Interviews with Gerhard Berger, Bertrand Gachot. I love Bertrand Gachot. I thought he was going to punch you. Jean Alesi already up there. And we're posting a new one every single week. EJ, look, Bertrand, it was definitely one of my favourite guests. What a character. What about yourself?
Bertrand was always a super smart guy. I struggled to find somebody better at acquiring sponsors and commercial interests. He had a very, very fertile brain. He knew where to go, how to go. So that was the very reason. When I spoke to 600 delegates from Pepsi Cola the day he got arrested for for doing that mace with the taxi driver. I wanted him beside me because he was such a clever person to be able to use as a foil to bring up different stories. So I was devastated when he never turned up, and I couldn't understand. It was only afterwards that I realised that he was in Bow Street Police Station or jail or the Nick. So we haven't let him forget about that. But he could have so easy have hated me right to this day. But he readily admits, it takes some bottle to be able to come out and say, you know something? Going to jail for 6 months, I learned such a lot. I saw a different way of life. I don't hold it against you, Eddie. I said, well, I didn't send you to jail. Get a grip of yourself here, Gasho. So we do banter off each other. His daughter is just the most amazingly gorgeous girl, but her voice is sublime and absolutely brilliant. And as you know, we've played some of her songs on the show, and at a charity thing that you came to me, the Amber charity, she sang a Sinead O'Connor song, and honestly, it goosebumps. It was absolutely brilliant. And he is a magic guy, and he is now, thankfully, a great friend.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Well, that episode and many others can be watched on the YouTube channel. And EJ, I think this is a good time for us to wrap this particular episode up. So I want to thank you. I think the next time we're doing this, we're going to be in the same room, which I'm looking forward to. It's been a long winter without you by my side. And of course, we'd like to reach out to our listeners and say thank you very much for your attention. And well, if you're enjoying the show, let other people know about it. So EJ, it's goodbye from me.
Time for a growl. Guys, thank you for believing in the growl. And I was hoping that this was going to be the last time, but apparently I'm being asked to do even more. So, ladies and gentlemen,